Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Rethinking Work podcast. We took a bit of a detour this week. We've got John Hoyle, who is the founder and CEO of Souq, and we actually recorded on Oxford Street in a retail unit.
Yeah, it was like being on the Radio 1 roadshow, wasn't it? We'd set it up and punters were walking past thinking, what are they doing in there?
It was great. We had random looks in. They were like, what on earth is going on? Which is actually very apt for Souq. So Souq are a hyper-flexible, I would describe them as a retail unit, but actually that's doing a massive disservice. They have created a kind of new typology with underused retail units, and they've gone from strength to strength. And I think coming out of COVID, they've really hit the ground running, where retailers are really questioning what they do with retail units. And they've come up with a really innovative solution, which is kind of tech-focused, app-driven, and it allows for super flexible short leases of a day. And it's been really successful. So we were very lucky to interview him.
And again, it's quite inspiring to meet people who have actually done it and taken on investment and hear about the current challenges they're facing.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Oh, and get in touch with us on Able Partners and Able_Partners on Instagram or Twitter. Thank you. That'd be great. Right, so I'm going to introduce you. First of all, thank you for coming on Rethinking Work. We're joined with John Hoyle, who is the founder of Souq. And I've actually been following you for about, I was going to say 2 years, through our mutual friend, Nikki Whiteman, who kept saying, you should meet John. You've got to meet John. She'll get another mention. She's basically connected half of our guests that have come on. And we were joking that we're like, what an awful time to be in retail over COVID. And I thought actually coming out of COVID, you are one of the best placed people to kind of grab this explosion of people who have digital online shops who want to come and have a physical store, but don't want any of the admin. So could you give us a bit of background?
Well, we're in it. Can I just add, we're in Oxford Street. We're in a retail asset. Ben and John are looking out at a busy Oxford Street. We've got the Souq branding all around us. And we're having a pop-up kind of radio show. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's for as well. You know, why can't it be a studio for this sort of thing? Why can't it be, you know, a gym, a bank, an event space, a shop? Crazy, a shop in a shop.
But, I mean, I've got so much to say on this. I would like to hear the hardship story that I started in the garage, no one believed me, and here I am, and I'm on top of the world, or in a version of that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have always wanted to do something for myself, and I was a Grosvenor, an asset manager and developer there, so, you know, building all the sorts of stuff that you guys have designed for many years, and it just frustrated me a little bit, and I wanted an adventure. But, you know, being a landlord, I was so used to putting risk onto occupiers and just the same old people time and time again. A very flawed business model, and obviously flawed, but with very little appetite either from the retailers actually or the asset managers to change, because we've created this kind of ecosystem where you need bankable occupiers to fill your spaces. And that effectively cuts out the opportunity with almost limitless other occupiers. And so I left my sensible job. I actually went on a little adventure in Africa first, which I won't talk about now because it'll take too long. But I wanted to do something that involved tech, and I joined an accelerator when I got back, which is all about solving big social problems using tech. I'm not a techie. I've launched a couple of very basic MVPs for other kind of businesses, but I could see the scale, and I was also searching for something called Ikigai, you know, the idea that I was doing something that was good for the world, that I was good at, that could make me money, and I can't remember the fourth thing, but the idea is you create the intersection of that, you get fulfillment. And I obviously, one thing I know a lot about is the economics of real estate, particularly around offices and retail. So I spent 9 months thinking about the problem. There are some real trailblazers who've got models that do sort of similar things to Souq, but in my view, didn't quite go far enough. And yeah, just came up with this idea, which was, could you maximize 120 hours across a week in the, you know, nearly 100,000 empty shops around the UK and repurpose them on an hourly basis for whatever customers needed at that time? Because when you think about it, a Monday and a Saturday are completely different places wherever you are in the world. But our retail model is completely static. And it's grown that way, partly because landlords enjoy de-risking it and putting all the risk onto occupiers, and partly because of stuff. You know, we shops have been the distribution channel for stuff for decades. and they're not anymore, or at least they don't need to be. And so when you think about it in that context, why would anyone take a shop for 7 days a week? We're sitting opposite Zara. Zara sells most of its stuff in a very short window of the week, and the rest of the time, it's, to all intents and purposes, a fancy warehouse, which is bonkers. So I just wanted to see what you could do to facilitate easy turnaround time so that lots of different people could use it for the right things at the right times to their audience and then get out. And ultimately, what we want to create is a platform that is full of souks, just like the one we're sitting in, where people can have the same experience to promote their product, service, activity, whatever, without necessarily having to be there, and do it potentially globally. So could we be in this Oxford Street space today doing this podcast? And you could probably actually, without having to move anywhere, do the same thing in New York tomorrow, or even at the same time. And just see space in a completely different way, which is really not looking at selling space on a per square foot basis, but thinking about selling time.
We should point out that for those listening that in terms of like the shop size, is Oxford Street, is this a large unit? Is this a medium unit?
This is medium. We kind of feel like this. I mean, we're learning a lot at the moment. We actually don't know what our optimum space is for. And that's a really exciting kind of journey, and no one really knows. So we're kind of pioneering that. This feels about right because you can be a single occupier and you cannot get lost in it. However, for, you know, similar size to our Edinburgh space where we had Radley, the women's accessories brand, and for them it was a bit small because they think about things like lateral shelf space. And, you know, that sort of stuff, whilst to me sounds incredibly boring, is very important to these guys. And, you know, we didn't know that before we engaged with them. And so
it won't be one size fits all. I like this idea of time, not space. So you're taking, I mean, we were talking to GPE and we went to that amazing Cretech conference about why hasn't property been disrupted in the same way that other industries has. And to me, this is disruptive because you're making it more like an airline business or a hotel business where it's very time sensitive. So a flight that's just departed has zero value. A hotel room that's empty at 11 p.m. at night has zero value. And you're making it much more time sensitive, and you're going to be able to constantly test and iterate as a result. So what actually we find that jewelry retailers do really well here, or these times of the day or week do really well. So you can kind of take those learnings and those bright spots and apply them to the rest of your organizations. Whereas I think a traditional landlord, would they have to wait much longer for that sort of feedback?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, the simple answer to your question is the reason real estate hasn't evolved is because of money. You know, it is anchored by debt finance, and that needs to be low risk. So all the asset managers are chasing a guarantee of income as far down the line as possible, hence the advent of 10-year leases. You know, an asset to them is worth more if they can guarantee income in year 9 than if it generates 5 times what the headline rent is in year 1 and then there's no guarantee beyond that. And that's just a perverse method of valuation that is backed up by the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, and the world is changing to recognise more flexible leases. But yeah, what we're doing at Souk is so obvious, and in a world where agility is really treasured in a way, and it's become an expectation from online brands that it's the norm. If landlords don't adapt to that partially, I'm not saying the whole world needs to be an agile model, but they don't recognize that that is a significant proportion of their customer base, then they're going to miss out on big opportunities.
And I think as well, I think to explain Souk, because I love explaining to people, because in a world where we've lived digitally for about the last 2 years on and off, suddenly, you know, we're looking at, as a company, we're looking, how do we market ourselves? So, you know, we can promote ourselves on social media and you can pay to boost promotions. And I know that bigger brands will spend an enormous amount in boosting digital marketing. But suddenly, if you hire this place, we're on Oxford Street, there's thousands of people walking past us. I cycle past this when I go to the gym. I've seen like 5 random different people that I've gone, oh, that's interesting, I should find out a bit more about them. It legitimizes their business because I know they're real, I can go in and talk to them. So for the cost of hiring this unit a day, might actually be a better use of their marketing collateral than it is to just spend £10,000 on Instagram marketing, because it's just a different time, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, the world's gone full circle when you think about when suddenly online brands were emerging and it was like, we're awesome, save money on stock, save money on real estate, and everyone knows where we are. It's simple. But of course, now getting noticed is really, really hard. That engagement is a proven way of successfully enhancing your business development online. And but of course, people don't want to go back to having a 10-year lease, because you won't get a shop on Oxford Street on a traditional basis without parting with hundreds of thousands of pounds. There's no straight route into it unless you use this model at the moment. So, and the expectation as well has grown, not just in terms of sort of that flexible engagement, but also the ability to do cool stuff. You know, we give a £100,000 tool, essentially, which you can put whatever content you want onto the wall, and using Canva, which all the kids use to deploy their socials, you just deploy it to a shop, you can walk around it in 3D, you can control it from anywhere. And then I think the final thing that is really important in the world that we're now part of is analytics. If you set up a Shopify sort of presence, you know who's coming to visit your shop. You can understand your customer really well without engaging with them. This does all of that. So not only do you know the conversion rate in terms of people walking past and how they're coming in, and you can apply that to the time of the day, you know the age, gender, and approximate affluence of the feet in your space. The heat map camera you can see above us tells you how that footfall sample is engaging with the digital content on the walls. So just like a mobile phone device, you can see what people like. You can test this like a lab.
That's a heat map camera.
Yeah.
So you see how we love data. Love data. Yeah. So that thing can track how many people are in here, where they're stood, population map, what time they come in, and you get all that data, that they get access to that data as well.
Yeah. So at the moment we basically give everything away, but we won't for forever. But it's a combination of third-party tools and stuff that we've built ourselves that creates a really powerful picture. And what we want to ultimately be is the brain of every high street that we're on, because this could be the litmus test of essentially high street health, or maybe health's the wrong word. Maybe it's appetite or character. It could be a reflection of what that place wants and resonates with. And when you think about the big brands, I mean, everyone's talking about how D2C is waning because it's actually quite hard work. Well, that's because of all of the costs. And we are the perfect vehicle for, let's say, a Nike to go into a town that it would never, ever have a shop in to test. I mean, imagine that you open a Nike store via a souk in Penzance. We don't have a souk in Penzance, but one day. You imagine the interest that would drive. They've got customers everywhere. You could be on the Isle of Bute. You literally could be anywhere. Creates a massive buzz. They learn an awful lot. And then they disappear, but the halo effect remains. And that's really what this tool is from a retail perspective. And of course, it can be repurposed for all sorts of lower value, but equally important from a community and placemaking perspective, the rest of the time.
Because that social aspect is important here. And I'm thinking the elements you've described there are one. I mean, you haven't mentioned this specifically, but the rejuvenation of Oxford Street, it is suffering. We're at the good end of it, but the other end is American candy shops and some pretty questionable retail. And actually, you're doing Westminster a huge favour by saying this is what the next generation looks like, and we will all benefit from that in the community around us.
Thanks for saying that, because we're just about to enter a big tender process with Westminster, so hopefully they'll go for us.
We'll snip that out for you on the video. Yeah.
Then you can, this idea of being able to measure change in regional high streets so that actually you can aggregate that knowledge for good and for growth. And I think that idea that you can create events, like create a Nike event that drives communities together. That's the fourth part of your Japanese diagram, isn't it? Surely, John.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And also just embracing brands that don't currently exist in real life. And there's more online than there ever have been in the world before. In fact, the perverse, you know, we really as a sector in real estate should be taking a kind of good hard look at ourselves. There's a lot of blame at the government and business rates, and it's fair, but it's often used to deflect from the failing business model that we as asset managers historically have used. You know, when you open up access to spaces like this to everyone, there is a huge demand for it, and it comes from unexpected places. I mean, Depop sellers, Instagrammers, TikTokers, this group that I frankly find it quite hard to engage with because I'm a middle-aged man.
But we know exactly how you feel.
Yeah. I have no idea what you're doing.
But you know, like the bringing Oxford Street to a standstill, and I mean, Edinburgh this weekend was the same. These are 20-year-olds who are their own brand. They're making good money online through platforms that even like my wife, who considers herself fashionable, hasn't heard of. And that's an amazing that...
She'll really respect that burn. I know.
So, you know, and that's what excites me. And then there's, you know, can we provide a platform so that all of those brands don't need to actually hire a marketing agency? They can stand on their own two feet, just like they do on Instagram, behind their own personality, because that's actually authenticity, not paying a third party to create it for you. And then can they scale nationally or even globally without the ball ache, frankly, if I should say headache, maybe.
No, it's fine.
Of real estate, because for the bigger brands that have traditionally succeeded, they've needed to be business people in the real estate sector, as well as designers, marketeers, etc. Well, let's just let everyone focus on what they're good at and give them something that really works.
Well, speaking of focusing on what you're good at, is it? I mean, it's maybe a bit of an unfair question, this, but are you fundamentally a real estate business or fundamentally a technology business? Could you know, Instagram is a platform, so it's Souq is a platform, it has real estate applications and assets. I like to ask, what does sort of a 10x fantasy look like for Souq? Is it there's a Souq in every high street? Is it the whole of Oxford Street is Souq? Or is it no, Souq deploys, it has a big digital HQ or digital sort of headquarters, and these are how we deploy in an ever-changing real estate market. What does that fantasy look like?
Yeah, so I mean, it's worth saying how other people talk about us. You know, you've got what I would describe as booking platforms who are describing themselves as tech businesses, and I think that's a bit of a reach. And we all saw the WeWork kind of inflation, shall we call it, or exaggeration. It's not really a tech business, and often investors who are trying to suppress our valuation are like, oh, you're not scalable because you're not a SaaS platform. The way I would describe Souq, which is different from both those elements, is that we're a physical device. And it's difficult for the listeners to understand this, but you're sitting within what is effectively a massive iPhone. It is entirely modular. It can be moved around, disassembled. It's not a sunk cost. It can go somewhere else. And of course, this is the iPhone 1 of Souq. And I'm excited about what the iPhone 14 of Souq's going to look like, floor to ceiling, digital or not. I mean, the possibilities are endless. And as you know, from the design background yourselves, I'm sure you can imagine, I'm very excited about the utility of ceilings and how we can make better use of them. But frankly, the possibilities are endless. And when people are, you know, going on about the metaverse that no one understands, I think actually this is a wonderful place for the intersection of digital and physical to occur. Yeah. Way better than
I'm so glad you said that, because I was just thinking this is one of the few places, because you have the heat map thing, you can imagine a evolution of that, which is if you had this as a metaverse space, a digital space, but if you had an online brand who did an online event, digital, and everyone could go in, but you can see digitally how many people is, but your heat map could then have a physical interpretation of it, and suddenly there's an overlap between how many people are on online and how many people are in the store, and you can overlap the two. And I think that's really interesting.
Well, like the esports sector, which is basically not catered for in the high street at all, you know, this is a perfect format for that. But just to go back to your early question about what we are, I think that device analogy is really important, because it's a physical element that will upgrade. And actually, there's a revenue stream there for us, just like, you know, when you get FOMO, oh, look at the camera on his phone. Oh, I need that. We are trying to build relationships with landlords a bit like you and I have with our mobile phone providers. You don't pay for your mobile phone up front. It comes out of your contract, and you get itchy feet after about 2 years when you've got a crack on the screen. And you're like, ooh, I quite fancy that one because it does some clever feature. Well, the same is here. We are constantly iterating the physical device and, of course, the software updates behind, you know, the screens, which is simple to do. So in terms of product, you know, it's a tech business based around a device, So a combination of software
and
hardware.
You have all these, you've got this black book of influencers and emerging talent and emerging brands and who are feeding back to you what their likes or dislikes are all of the time. So you just, I mean, is the secret just to stay ahead of the competition now? You're innovated, you've launched a new sector to a degree, and you are bound to have lots of imitators coming quickly after you, and you just keep ahead, keep innovating.
Well, yeah, I mean, I embrace competition. You know, that there, and actually, I have real respect for some of the people that have come before us who are, I would say, less innovative than us, but have done a really important pioneering piece of work to change landlords' attitudes. There are, you know, a number of, let's call them, booking systems that have really gritted it out, you know, blazing a trail. No one would be talking to me if it wasn't for the likes of Storefront, Appear Here, all of these guys. And I think there's an opportunity. It's a big enough market for us all to exist. What Souq's really going for is a fractional leasing model in a way that perhaps the others aren't. I think they are all, you know, their margins are smaller because they want to do longer deals. What we're actually embracing is utility, and we're not about retail. I mean, it's because we're sitting in a shop, the tendency is, oh, pop-up shops. It's actually, for me, not about that. It's about what you can use underutilized spaces for, you know, ad infinitum, and the community piece is massively important. You know, we had a guy turn the South Moulton Street space into a shrine to his girlfriend and propose to her. I love that. We're a Corona testing center in the other South Moulton Street store. These spaces, which we, as, you know, local community members effectively own, or at least, you know, have some moral ownership of, should be available for people to use in different ways. And unless we start embracing that, you think of all the boundaries to that, like planning use and appetites of landlords, this surpasses all of that and allows you suddenly to use spaces for whatever. You know, you come here on Tuesday night, reggae aerobics, basically twerking, get your free ticket.
Oh, I was there last year, Tom. I do think you mentioned Derwent, and we're going to name check Philippa Davies, who's a sort of friend, and I'm going to call her friend of the show. Bad to listen.
But she'll have to know.
It's perfect for the problem you solve for the big landlords is obvious. One, you can have a conversation with them about the types of tenants that you're having in Souq, plus they have the security of a longer term lease from you. So they I'm interested to hear your views on that. And the other challenge that we find doing big commercial developments is the retail's not that it doesn't necessarily drive that much revenue. It's a planning requirement, it's an activation of the street frontage, and then you end up with a Boots or a Dixon's, I'm sorry if you work there, but actually that's not necessarily what a Grosvenor or a Derwent wants underneath, and it's a problem. Anyway, you're going to contradict me, which is...
Well, yeah, so, I mean, just an important thing to say about the business model. I was putting all this together in 2019 as WeWork was collapsing. So our mantra has been no capex, no leases. And what that does is it means that the landlords are taking risk on our behalf.
Okay, I hadn't understood that.
Yeah.
So you're not a landlord?
No.
I thought you were I wasn't going to make the comparison with WeWork. I was going to call it retail.
Yeah. No, you rehearsed that yesterday. Yeah. Nailed it.
Yeah, I think it went well.
With
did it go
finger.
Well? Did it go well?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's not to say we won't take more risk in the future. You know, now that we know this makes money, we're going to start paying for our fit-outs. But the relationship we want is much more like the mobile phone device analogy that I used. And that isn't what asset managers really want. They really want the world to go back to normal. Not everyone is like Derwent, who are prepared to think forward. We've got some amazing, I mean, we're only dealing with huge asset managers, PLC sort of plus, as I describe it. And they want to see that actually over a period of years, this can continue to drive 2 to 3 times the revenue of a headline rent. But the problem with that is that traditionally, that doesn't have the same value as, I think I was explaining earlier, rent 9 years in the future. That is changing, but it's a slow process. And as we move up the adoption curve, it will become more possible. But I've just got to keep proving that as a cash generator, this works. and that there's reliability, and then they become increasingly more amenable. But we've got to take these guys on a journey. They've been through a process of groupthink through the APC.
Well, what's great as well is that the high street has never been less competitive, so they're willing to take a risk. And you've really, you've used that opportunity massively, and look what you've created. And we were on Oxford Street. I mean, 5 years ago, how much would it have cost to have this unit on Oxford Street? I think it's also the fact that it's all video screens and the fact that you can change it. Just before we came on, you had all these cool videos spiraling around. And we asked your tech, the guy Paddy, who was in here, you couldn't just change this for us? And he rang your headquarters and like, you've got 20 minutes. I need to have static images on each screen. And like within like 5 minutes, zoom, the whole shop had changed. And it was very interactive.
It's a bit slow for my liking. I'll have a word with Paddy. But yeah, I mean, effectively, it's live. There's some control measures in place so that people don't put stuff we don't want on the screens. I'm waiting for the moment, the first comedy picture, which we can all imagine.
Getting hacked.
Yeah.
I mean, can we touch on that debt financing? Because I think that is quite interesting. I mean, partly I went to business school and I'm beginning to understand some of this stuff for the first time. But the more predictable your incomes are, the more debt you can carry because you know where the revenue is coming from. So that is one of the reasons I think property is so kind of heavily leveraged in debt. Now that is changing, you know, people are reducing the amount of commercial office space, or it is just much foggier, that future. Retail is changing very fast. Suddenly that debt looks a bit more kind of wobbly. And I'm interested that you said no capex, no leases. And it's a credit to these big organizations that they are kind of almost going to give up what was traditionally predictable revenues with an innovative business model. Is it because, what's the other alternative? Getting another, failing traditional model in?
Well, so two questions there. So on a debt perspective, you know, there's no one that wants to take less risk than banks, and banks sit behind the entire sector. There's a real process that has to be gone through, and it's basically pain and failure before people really want to change that. And it's worth considering that, you know, our pensions, our insurance companies, they are heavily exposed to real estate and particularly retail assets because they've been a brilliant place to get your nice risk-free return. And we've driven, with the help of private equity, sort of financing retailers to a point of unsustainability, which the pandemic has exposed. But there's still loads of people that think it's going to go back to normal, and it's not. There's a lot more pain to come before those attitudes really change. And you can hide behind lease lengths because the true asset values are not actually exposed right now. And there's lots of talking behind closed doors, but the market hasn't really recognized the extreme issues that face, not just at retail, but, you know, everywhere. And, you know, think about it. If you're the asset manager who gets a bonus on a 12-month basis, or maybe you're 5 years from retirement, no one's got any interest in blowing the whistle on this. And also, maybe there's actually major economic trauma associated with a run on all these markets. So I'm not saying that everyone needs to suddenly write everything down, but that's what drives the inertia. Now, moving towards a more agile model for real estate requires a complete redeployment of trillions of pounds worth of investment in assets. And what's the alternative? Where do you find risk-free income? Who knows where it's going to come, how that will evolve. So it'd be very interesting to watch how that happens.
Something that's just occurred to me as you were saying that, one of the things that a big line of work for us as Able Partners is retrofitting assets that are either becoming functionally obsolete or failing in their ESG ratings, and we steam in and we've kind of reinvent and reimagine those buildings. But actually, a souk model is a great thing to come into an end of life building, for want of a better word. It's sort of like a meanwhile space while you run it down. You know, we're harvesting the buildings for material and embodied carbon to use elsewhere. But actually, difficult place to have a long tenant, difficult place to have a big headquarter buildings. I want souk to go and do nightclub venues or big conferences, suit conferencing, you know, makes such a lot of sense, doesn't it? You come in, you sweep in, you just turn on the brand. I want to come aboard, John, and drive some of these products. Yeah.
Well, I think you touch on something that's really close to my heart, because I hate waste. And everyone, a lot of the focus, particularly around venture capital into construction, is about construction techniques that are more adherent to whatever ESG goals we have. And I think that's missing the point. We've got so many assets that are sitting unused. Why build more stuff? We've already, particularly in retail terms, we've already got too much retail. There's got to be better ways to use what's already there. I mean, M&S knocking down their stores got a lot of press recently. I mean,
it's still out, isn't it? It's back, been hauled in again for a review. So it's not a done deal, but it's become a kind of metaphor for the whole wider industry that M&S stores.
And interesting, really good engagement for us with Cyborg Labs, which is Google's kind of reimagining our cities. They have shelved it, but they had something which was called Stoa. So the Stoa is kind of the colonnades in the ancient Agora, which is why it's called that. The idea that you could build shops future-proofed with flexibility so that people could effectively partition and increase or decrease the size of the shops. It's effectively souk, but new build souk. And I was just like, guys, you don't need to build anything new. There's enough shops and there are enough places that have a critical mass of humans, which is effectively what retail needs, without you needing to build new districts. And I think we just need to foster that mindset more, particularly in cities like London, where we've already got an incredible city, right? We don't need to be knocking stuff down and rebuilding it. We just need to think smartly about how we use it.
Do you know what's interesting as well? Because I cycle past this at such random times, and even when it's closed, you've got all the video screens going. It like massively animates what is quite a dull street at night. And I can totally see, I can imagine, you know, near where I live, there's some old railway arches. You put a railway arch souk in there at night. I mean, suddenly it's exciting. Oh, there's a souk opening. That means we've got, oh, great, everyone can hire it. And
yeah, or it'll, on a base level, it'll stop me urinating against the door because it looks kind of... Anyway, it does make me think, though, we do office design and people are moving away from the feeling of we're Motorola, we need a big logo on the front of the building. Actually, we want the flexibility of coming into a workspace. I wonder if retailers will start feeling that. If you are maybe not a niche thing, but a beauty brand or an electronics brand, you know, do you really need a Currys or a Dixon sign above it? Could you not just take it for a day? That they'll realise customers perhaps don't care about that. I'm going to cast your mind forward for 15 years, and I'm walking down Oxford Street. Am I going to see lots of models like souk, but there's one that's focused around wellness and health and beauty, and one focused around electronics. So every high street is going to have these brands, but they're all housing multiple brands. Or have I got overexcited and misunderstood?
Well, it's possible, but in my mind, it's slightly missing the point of utility. I mean, I suppose there is an argument to be said, focusing on a specific sector makes it clear what your destination is. But I would always argue that a beauty brand has got a clear peak and a clear trough. And then there's something that's probably completely unrelated to it that should be in the space. As you can probably tell, I'm absolutely obsessed with utility, as boring as that sounds. You know, it's, can we generate revenue 200% of the time by doing, you know, is this a media play? Could this be a homeless shelter, right? I mean, like, the possibilities are sort of endless. And it's not all about money. It's about creating a sustainable business model within assets that are not used. And we're already proving that can work just looking at the retail bit. But of course, retail banking. Why not just have your banks at lunchtime? It's the only time anyone goes in to see their bank manager anyway. Pret-a-manger, good example of a business that's got a lot of real estate. But really, all it wants to do is distribute coffee and sandwiches in most locations.
I'd come in and work here during the day and leave at lunchtime while the retail bank popped up while I went and had my lunch. You know, it's totally. You could use it for office space, and loads of people would be grateful for that as well.
Yeah. So, and gyms, another really inefficient model. And then there's more interesting stuff. So one of my inspirations for this was at Grosvenor. I worked on a deal for Gagosian, which is a huge art gallery in the north end of Berkeley Square. And Grosvenor Place, the old Savills office. And it's a really cool development. Larry Gagosian's the first art dealer to make $1 billion out of selling art. He pays an enormous amount of rent for a space that is amazing, but basically unused other than when they're dragging people in with the offer of free glass of champagne. And, you know, it...
Where is it again?
Sadly, that doesn't happen very often. But, you know, the art model is... The art gallery model is another one that doesn't really work for artists. You know, artists will lose 50% of their income through commission to an art gallery when most of the time that art gallery is empty. Surely there's a way for them to control their own businesses, drive that kind of launch party, which is when all the sales get made, and then go away. Or make it digital and take it on a roadshow. That's just one example of many different models: estate agency, car showrooms, using augmented reality to achieve much more interesting goals, making stuff appointment-based.
I can totally see that. It reminds me of that Japanese bookshop that only sells one book, and they do a book launch every 2 weeks and just sell it. I was imagining, don't get an estate agent. Just hire this place to sell your house. Get some great images up. Stand at the front and say, this is the best deal. And you get like 3,000 people... walking past.
That's such a really good idea.
Well, if there are people listening to this who you know, are maybe working a full day week, they've got a hobby that's turning into a side hustle, like, what's the best way to engage with Souq, and what should we all do?
Well, I mean, yeah, reach out to us through our website, which is souq.space. We are there to come up with a solution that works best for whatever it is you want to achieve. And you can be anything from a personal trainer to an artist to a Depop seller, you know, to someone who just wants somewhere to have their team away day. You know, this is all enabled so you could have a conference call with whatever offices you have.
There's a party room downstairs.
We're actually having to rein in the parties. People are enjoying it too much. The neighbors are not happy. But yeah, I mean, we're licensed. So it really, yeah. One of the things that I'm really keen on trying, we're going to try and do this year, is for this to be the private dining room of restaurants in the vicinity. Because, or frankly, it could be a Deliveroo deal. Like, how cool would it be to turn this, let's say it's your 21st birthday, this just becomes a shrine of all the really embarrassing photos of you that your mates have collected, and you sit and have a meal. I mean, what a cool personalized way of doing something that, you know, just doesn't exist.
I guess I've been explaining to this to everyone, it's a hyper flexible retail. That's massively downplaying. You don't see it as a retail store at all. You just see it as a completely, like a completely augmented room that you can do anything to that just happens to be in a location which is traditionally retail.
Exactly.
Has that had any sort of planning implication? Do they, because this is, you're kind of every, if it's a homeless shelter, it's residential, if it's part, it's every sector. Did the planners, have they?
Yeah, I mean, homeless shelters definitely pushing the envelope, but within, I mean, they've really relaxed the retail use classes in the last 2 years. So we can pretty much, our limitations really at the moment are more around infrastructure than they are around use. And even if you would do something outside of the traditional use class, if you don't exceed a certain percentage of the time, which, famous last words, no one from Westminster is going to be out there with a Glock, you can kind of push the envelope. So, no, the opportunity in the UK is pretty, it's slightly different in Scotland, actually, where we have a space in Edinburgh, and we're just about to open in North America and the UAE. So, you know, different challenges in different places. Those are just all kind of bridges that we have to cross as we bring this new model to the world.
You really just threw that in there, didn't you? Just world global outreach. So is that this? So I was going to ask you what the future of Souq is, but what else is there? Just massive global expansion. Nothing big.
Yeah. So someone told me don't do more than 2 time zones, and we're going to do 3 this year. So we want the power in this and the defensibility in this is a network that people can use to have an agile platform to do whatever they want in it. And so there is an element of a kind of land grab associated with that. Some of our investors are very keen for us to take a lot more risk and get more established. I'm less keen to do that simply because there is no competition at the moment. And I don't mind if there is. Like, we're talking about 100,000 empty shops in the UK.
Isn't it the classic thing as well? An investor might have 10 plays, so if you go pop, it doesn't matter because he's got 9 more, whereas he's your baby.
Yeah, and slow and steady wins the race. We're learning so much. We want to, you know, really put our foot on the accelerator next year when we'll have, you know, probably 20 sites globally, and I think that's a better place to do it from than today. But, you know, and also I really do think competition would enhance this because there's plenty of space. I mean, we're not going to have 100,000 units in the UK. And if we do, we're bigger than Walmart. So much, much bigger by per square footage. So there's, you know, I actually want people to come and play because I think competition will help us, help adoption, probably increase our valuation because then investors are like, oh, we've got to move quicker. You know, it's just not a bad thing for us.
No, I was just going to say, there is no doubt that everyone is watching and not least your performance and profitability, and that will drive the competition. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
We'll wrap this up, coming up to the 40-minute mark. I just had one question. I actually think, like, this scale of store is actually perfect for you, isn't it? Would you rather have 150 little ones all gathering data in different cities, different sectors, different global areas than like 10 bigger ones and they want you to scale? Is that the ambition?
Yeah, I think this size is good. I mean, we're about to hopefully soon experiment with movable rear walls. So actually, what's really cool about this device is it can be put into a much, much bigger unit. And if we've got movable rear walls, it can adjust for the occupier. And actually, what's really important about all of this is the back of house. We're a bit constrained in this particular Oxford Street location. The ideal unit has rear loading, so a bit like a theatre set. All of the kind of prep goes on when you're not paying for your shop, and you can store stuff, almost limitless amount of stuff. We'll take care of that for you for a small premium. And then you just roll it out when you're ready, if stuff is important to what you're trying to do. And, you know, that why I think that's interesting is because there are obviously some huge problem units. Well, we can partition off the high value frontage. What about click and collect opportunities? I mean, you know, this is a perfect place actually to drive footfall to basically unrelated uses. We can satisfy that last mile and logistics piece as well, which is going to be increasingly important. So, yeah, to answer your question, I'm much more interested in having lots of different locations because the cumulative data lake that we build from all of that knowledge on an hourly basis puts us well ahead of anyone else to understand what works best, in what location, at what time, and in which way. And if we understand that, we can guarantee our customers' success. And then why wouldn't you use Souq if you know that you're going to make a return and we can guarantee it based on data?
That's so interesting. Thank you so much for coming on, John. That's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you.